Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, finally, straight from the land down under.
Straight from the land down under.
Mr. Chad John C. Reilly.
I was going to do an Australian accent, and now I'm trying to do Wreck-It Ralph, and it's just none of it's going to work.
I'm going to wreck it.
I'm going to wreck it, Mike.
That was terrible.
It was close enough. With us as well, Mr. Spencer Vanellope Williams.
Okay, whatever. I'm not even going to... I'm glad you're back, Chad. Don't ever leave me with Eddie alone.
Deal. Maybe. We'll discuss my contract negotiations later.
We are here, and we're excited because we got a chance to check out a special screening of Ralph Breaks the Internet. I keep wanting to say Wreck-It Ralph 2, but it's...
I mean, that's what people know it as, Wreck-It Ralph 2.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same
thing. Is that not what it's called?
No, it's called Ralph Breaks the Internet.
I thought it was Wreck-It Ralph 2, Ralph Breaks the Internet.
Nope.
It's one big, long monstrosity of a title.
So I'll tell you what, we'll jump into that, but before we do, Chad, why don't you give us all of those lovely opening credits?
No matter what corner of cyberspace you've crept out of to listen to our episodes, the Filmlosophers podcast is brought to you by Mingle Media TV and VGB Studios. Like hitting replay on an arcade game, it's easy to access new levels of the show. In fact, if you subscribe to the Filmlosophers on any of your favorite streaming platforms, we'll do the delivery work for you. Subscribers get immediate access to new lessons each Wednesday morning on Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, and more.
If you're looking for a confidence booster, don't head to the comment sections of your favorite online videos. You'll only find trolls. Instead, come chat with us. Follow us, The Filmlosophers, on Facebook at facebook.com/filmlosophers and Twitter at twitter.com/philosophy101. Finally, if this episode makes you want to wreck it, don't throw in the towel. We have nearly 140 episodes in our library, and one of them might be the perfect way to start a new friendship. Aww. Maybe not with us, but we'll leave that up to you.
Yep, you can check out our entire archive at filmlosophers.com. But like I said, we got a great show in store as we're going to be talking about the upcoming film, Ralph Breaks the Internet. Or as most people know it as, is Wreck-It Ralph 2. Either way, we'll figure it out. But like I said,
Soon know it as the one with all the Disney princesses.
Exactly. But like I said, but before we do jump into that, why don't we go ahead and, Chad, like you usually do and you do so well, give us that official synopsis goodness.
Oh, are you saying you missed me? Say it.
I missed you.
Okay. Video game former reformed bad guy Ralph, voiced by John C. Reilly, and fellow misfit Vanellope von Schweetz, voiced by Sarah Silverman, must risk it all by traveling to the World Wide Web in search of a replacement part to save Vanellope's video game, Sugar Rush. In way over their heads, Ralph and Vanellope rely on the citizens of the internet, the netizens. They never named them that in the movie, but whatever.
Yeah.
To help navigate their way, including a website entrepreneur named Yes, voiced by Taraji P. Henson, who is the head algorithm and heart and soul of trend-making website BuzzTube.
Directed by Phil Johnston and Rich Moore, this film stars John C. Reilly, Sarah Silverman, Jack McBrayer, Jane Lynch, Alan Tudyk, and Ed O'Neill, as well as new voices, including Gal Gadot, Taraji P. Henson, and Alfred Molina. There's a ton of other people that are in this film that we'll get into in terms of little Easter eggs here and there.
So many Easter eggs in this movie.
So we'll jump into a little bit more of that as we jump into the review itself. A little bit of knowledge about the film. This is the first full-length computer animated sequel film to be produced.
That's a mouthful.
It really is. To be produced by Walt Disney Animation Studios and the fourth film overall by the same animation studio following The Rescuers Down Under back in 1990. Fantasia 2000 in 1999, and Winnie the Pooh in 2011. This sequel takes place 6 years after Wreck-It Ralph in 2012, the same amount of time that's passed in real life between the film's releases, between the release dates of the two films.
So wait, Wreck-It Ralph 1 wasn't a Walt Disney Animation Studios film?
That's a great question.
That's weird. I mean, we knew that it wasn't Pixar,
yeah.
A point that's made abundantly clear in a fun way in this movie, but I would have thought that Wreck-It Ralph 1 would have also been, well, so many films, like Frozen and Moana and all those are Walt Disney Animation Studios. I think the internet served you up a stink bomb.
Although they could have just bought another studio that nobody really heard about.
That's true.
No, it's listed as Walt Disney Animation Studios. Wreck-It Ralph.
Huh.
So, fifth. It's a running tally. We'll just keep it.
I mean, when you start the list with The Rescuers Down Under in 1990, I mean, talk about a curveball.
Well, as we said, we got a
chance. That was just another way to get me to reference the fact that I went to Australia, isn't
that
it?
That is true. It really was. Like,
I remember that movie, too, The Golden Eagle.
Yes.
I was frightened of that thing to begin with, but then I was like, that thing is cool.
I think the trailer of that movie scared me more than the actual movie itself. Like, the way that they portrayed the hunter.
Yeah,
like,
oh, yeah.
That guy was just menacing. Yeah, the poacher. And I think, I think I was fearful in actually watching it because of that guy.
Food for thought. The Rescuers Down Under is not, to my knowledge, a cameo Easter egg element of Ralph Breaks the Internet. But one of the other movies in this list is Winnie the Pooh.
That's true.
We have a little cameo from Eeyore at one point.
Yeah, which was really fun. Voiced by Brad Garrett.
Yeah.
So, but like I said, we got a chance to check out the film this past week. And one of the great things that this film has for it is so much anticipation. The first film, when it debuted back in 2012, so many people were excited for it. It was definitely a unique film for the studio because it was the first. I mean, you could almost say it's probably one of the first successful video game movies. I mean, because of everything that it included. Don't shake your head,
no,
Spencer.
No, it's a sad state of affairs. It has nothing to do with Wreck-It Ralph.
But it's true. Like, if you're thinking of successful video game adaptations, it's not necessarily based off of a real game, but there are tons of other real game characters that, you know, abide within this world.
Right.
Now, I will say, as somebody who never really grew up as a gamer, as a video game player, I was conned by your brother-in-law, which we're all laughing because it makes total sense. When we first saw a trailer for Wreck-It Ralph years and years ago, Omar made a comment that sounded like, I remember that game. I remember that dude. And I thought, oh, wow, they made a movie based on an actual arcade game? Yeah. So I thought for several weeks before somebody set the record straight with me, I thought that it was actually based on a real video game.
It came from Omar. That should have given you a warning.
I know. I should have been smarter. I have been ever since.
Aren't we all? But it's interesting.
Love you, Omar.
It's interesting.
I know you're not listening.
It's interesting to know. It's interesting to note, though, like this particular film, Wreck-It Ralph, was such a unique entry into not only just the film industry as a whole, but even for Disney to be able to pull this off and create a successful like collaboration with all these other entities, all these other IPOs, intellectual properties, with Sonic and Pac-Man and Qbert and the people who own, like, I guess Capcom owns the rights to the Street Fighter characters, and you know, you have all these other individuals, all these games that you remember growing up with, and you're seeing them in this movie, and it's a great nostalgic trip, if you will, for a lot of people, not just the younger kids who are going to see Wreck-It Ralph and see Vanellope and all that kind of stuff, but you also get a chance to see all the video games from your childhood. And I think that's what a really good video game adaptation does. Fast forward 6 years, and we finally get the follow-up to that film. And needless to say,
side note, it's crazy that it's been 6 years since Wreck-It Ralph came out. I don't understand, like, my time perception in my physical body does not understand that fact.
I don't see. Here's the thing. One of the big things that I think we are accustomed to now is the fact that we're used to sequels being yearly. Like, in my opinion, this is just my personal opinion, but like, I think like if you look at how sequels used to work as to how they work now, like with Star Wars, you get a Star Wars film every year. Marvel, you get at least two a year. Other big franchises, I mean, Resident Evil, they're popping them out left and right. Thank God, I hope they stopped. But like, but you look at like back then, and the bigger franchises like Star Wars or even Back to the Future, you know, all those films were like at least 2 years apart.
Okay, but it wasn't 6 years apart though.
Spencer,
I'm just saying that like there's a difference between like, oh, that was 3 years ago, and that was double that time.
Yeah,
that's true.
That's
good point.
You got a point. I don't know. I think a little time and space between the two. I think that just built anticipation. I mean, maybe they were just wrong in terms of how long they waited, but in the fact that there was still an audience for it, there's still people who are excited, there's still kids who are excited, and you know, you bring back the two main characters and people go nuts. Mm-hmm. You know, you have like a really great product. You have a really great, you know, property that you're working with. So I guess 6 years, yes and no, can be long and not long enough. I mean, I don't know. It's just, I don't know. What do you think, Spence?
Well, like, because the thing with sequels is that if you wait too long, you can sort of put people off. It's like, well, I didn't see the first one, or I don't remember it. And then, like, oh, I'll go watch the first one. And then they don't. And then they don't go see the sequel. So, like, that kind of stuff can, like, get in the way. But I don't feel like that's really a problem for this particular movie.
Huh.
Because, like, I actually kind of remember the main theme of, like, Wreck-It Ralph pretty well.
Yeah, well, like, Wreck-It Ralph, the first film, really, like, is embedded in my head in terms of, like, the storyline and the process of how that film's story, like, was translated. It made a lot more sense when it made sense to me, and it connected with me as a person watching a kid's cartoon movie, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the fact that it translated so well to all demographics, all ages, and they waited 6 years, I think I would have still been excited to see it if they waited 10 years. I mean,
as long as they do the sequel well.
Yeah.
Yes, of course.
You know, like if they totally flub the sequel, then it's sort of like, well, you made us get excited way after the first one was popular for no reason. Thank you. Yeah. No, thank you. This one, I would say, does not flub the sequel, although there may be a few points where fans say, okay, I didn't have to wait 6 years for that.
Yeah. So jumping into the review, let's go ahead and start with expectations. And obviously we're already kind of hitting on some of those with talking about Wreck-It Ralph. But in terms of this particular film, let's take the culmination of the last 6 years, or at least the last 2 years when they announced it a couple years back. Mm-hmm. I think it was like 2 years ago. And the expectation of what we were looking to see with this film. And let's go ahead and start with Chad, because Chad hasn't spoken much on this podcast, and I'd like to hear more of his voice.
Well, thank you. The reason for that is because I have a sore throat, not because I'm withholding. going into the movie, I enjoyed the first film. I was hoping that this would be as enjoyable, if not more, than the last one. I think my biggest expectation, I don't know that I'd call it an expectation, my biggest curiosity going into this was how many Easter eggs can they fit into this movie? And I know on one viewing, we've only seen it once.
Yeah.
There's no way we caught them all.
Oh, no.
Because
not by a long shot.
Some of those scenes are deep, like not thematically deep, although there is some thematic depth also. Yeah. But visually deep. There are things in the background of the background that are referencing things in the real world, or I mean, like, just there's all kinds of stuff. We'll get into it, but I was really hoping, after seeing a couple of trailers, I was hoping that there were going to be a lot of little Easter eggs all over the place.
Yeah.
That sort of, you know, keep your interest if maybe the storyline is a little basic. I didn't know how deep or detailed the storyline would be.
Yeah.
So I was hoping for a lot of fun distractions, basically.
What about you, Spence?
When I sat down in the theater yesterday and I was like, okay, it feels like it's been a really long time since I saw that first teaser trailer to today. And like, I was looking up online that apparently the teaser trailer came out like 8 months ago. So that's a really long time. Also, that first teaser trailer at the very end, they put a little Wreck-It Ralph 2 emblem on top of Ralph Breaks the Internet, so that's why I thought it was that title. So that's there you go.
Before Disney we went live, Spencer had been calling it Wreck-It Ralph 2, and we're like, no, IMDb doesn't have it listed as that. It has it listed as Ralph Breaks the Internet, and Spencer was going to break us.
He could. I have to figure out why I thought that there was a reason. But anyway, I was very excited. I was also a bit worried because from just like the trailers and stuff, there was a lot of references to tons of other properties, especially with the internet properties. That kind of made me a bit concerned because I'm like, I get they're going to the internet and you're going to see stuff from the internet because that makes sense.
Yeah.
But how much of a reference is it before it turns into like a straight up advertisement for Facebook type thing?
Yeah. Yeah. I was kind of in a similar boat in terms of like the understanding of like, okay, I get they're going to create the connections between, you know, our usage of the internet, everything we see on it, and how they're going to mimic it or parody it in some sort on in the film. Mm-hmm. The bigger names, like the bigger entities such as like Facebook, Twitter, Google, eBay, those are legitimately just spoken outright. Like they're in the film.
Right.
Sure.
But then you get little nods and notions towards like things like instead of YouTube, it's BuzzTube. Although, was I the only person who saw the YouTube?
No, YouTube action? Was no, in it, the universe.
It was, yeah.
It was in there, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought I was losing it. I'm like,
they just decided to mash together BuzzFeed and YouTube to create BuzzTube.
Well, and they made Knowsmore, which was Google as a thing, but Google was its own separate structure. So
yeah, it's weird. Like you,
they kind of duplicated certain aspects when the story needed that kind of a platform.
Yeah,
to work through.
No, and that's kind of one of the things that I was in the same mindset of Spencer. I knew they were going to be making mentions. I just was hoping it wasn't like a hit you over the head kind of like with how much we're going to be referencing, like, you know, with going overboard with the pop-ups or even like the how much, you know, Amazon, what all Amazon does, like, are they actually going to like the intricacies of like Amazon, like, oh, this is Amazon Video, this is Amazon Delivery, this is Amazon Home, this is Amazon Echo, this is it. Like, I didn't know how deep the rabbit hole was going to go for these things, and I was hoping that it wasn't going to spend too much time because then it would have got like a little tedious. But on top of that, also, my concern was knowing how Disney is trying to be progressive and they're trying to be, you know, still relevant and have that kind of dual audience nature, like, oh, we're going to have all this stuff for the kids, but there's going to be those little things that just the adults are going to get and they're going to enjoy, you know, kind of like the Shrek mentality, if you will.
Right.
So I was hoping that it wasn't going to get to that when they started getting to like to the dark web, and they were like, I was hoping, because there was scenes in the trailers like they were going to go and visit the dark web. Okay, cool. Like, we all know there are seedy places on the internet, and like nobody really wants to see that in a kid's movie, but you know that there are clever individuals who can figure out a way to input something like that into a film. I mean, they did it for The First Rescuers, so I'm just saying.
It's, well, and there's a long and storied urban history, at least, of frames of Disney animated films that have inappropriate things in them.
Yeah.
Or whole sequences, and you just don't notice it because you're seeing the whole and not the parts.
Exactly.
But the animators may have snuck an inappropriate part into a scene. This would obviously present the animators with a number of options for putting things in there that you don't want your kids to know about, but it goes so fast you wouldn't see it.
Exactly. And that's kind of like where I was thinking, like, there's so many different homages, there's so many different like things that they reference and give note to, and of all places, of all like locales, if you will, they're in the internet. So it's that was my biggest concern. I didn't want to see them try to create that type of dynamic within this film. And I didn't even check to see like what the rating was, because like had it been like PG-13 or even, I mean, even the PG one is kind of still a little.
It's PG.
Is it PG?
Yes.
Well, Either way, like that's just that was my biggest expectation of hoping not to see that. I knew it was going to be, I didn't doubt it was going to be fun. I didn't doubt it was going to be an interesting film. I didn't doubt I was going to have a good time, you know, seeing Vanellope and Ralph and everything else. I just, that was literally my biggest thing, you know, just worried about that. So, but jumping into the film, we are introduced right back into the fray with a lot of our old friends, especially John C. Reilly's Ralph, Sarah Silverman's Penelope, Vanellope, Von Schweetz, Jack McBriar's Felix, Felix, Jane Lynch, and she plays the soldier lady who is now domesticated.
Surprisingly so. I just that was surprising to me how.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a largely spoiler-free episode, but the Fix It Felix and I don't remember her character's name to be quite honest with you, but they are surprisingly absent from Calhoun. Thank you. They're surprisingly absent from most of the film.
Mm-hmm.
They're in it. I mean, they're in it more than once, but. They do not go on the adventure with Ralph and Vanellope.
And then, of course, you get the introduction to other unique characters, such as Taraji P. Henson's Yes, who is... She's ultimately, like, the deciding factor for BuzzTube to see what's relevant and what isn't. You have Gal Gadot, the one that a lot of people have been excited to see her as the racer in... one of the games online. It's really interesting. Even the fact that you get to see Alan Tudyk come back, not as the character, what was his name?
King Candy.
King Candy or...
whatever his actual name is.
Nitro or... are you going... Turbo. Turbo.
Yeah.
I was trying to remember the phrase. Are you going Turbo? No. Turbo in the first film, he actually voices Knows More, the Google-like search... engine.
Yeah, the librarian autofill guru.
and I think this film does a really good job of not overwhelming like the audience. As somebody who's watching the film, you're not like bombarded with like 12 different characters in the film that you have to kind of balance out and recognize who's who and what's what in terms of like the grand importance of what's happening. Like there's a scene where everybody's in, I guess... Felix and Calhoun's apartment or whatnot, and there's all these characters, and in my mind I was like, oh my gosh, I don't remember half of these characters' names, but then you come to realize they're not really a part of the overall story. They're just a blip in that particular part. The main people that you need to know, it's not a bombardment of like, oh, by the way, here's five characters you need to remember, and here's another five over here that you need to know, and here's another five there that you need to know. The film does a really good job of pacing out how it introduces the brand new characters.
Yeah, because if you were trying to keep track of all of them, you'd lose your mind.
Oh, like, 100%.
There are so many character, like, figures, I guess. Not necessarily important characters to the story, but there are so many character figures. If you were trying to track all of them through the whole story, you'd go nuts.
Yeah, 100%. And I think the good thing about this particular film is... it has fun with a lot of the people it's introducing. It's obviously it's showcasing everything from the internet. So you have a lot of internet individuals who pop up throughout the film. There's a lot of fun cameos from certain individuals you recognize immediately. I know there was one that all three of us recognized as soon as we saw it. And it was fun. It was a great little cameo. And it's just, it was really good as to how they were sporadically sprinkling in these really fun cameos on top of the already individuals that are already in the film.
Well, and the strongest cameos mostly are corporate synergy. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're all Disney owned, even something as small as the Tron light bikes.
Yeah.
Like Tron, what, Legacy or whatever, was a Disney movie.
Yeah.
A few years ago, you know, when it was released. And so early on in the story, one of the things you learn Ralph and Vanellope do in the arcade to stay excited and whatever is they race light bikes in the Tron arcade game, and it has a glitch and, you know, whatever that partially fuels their desire to go into the internet to begin with. But, you know, even something as small as that is self-referential.
Yeah. completely.
Not to mention when you get to other characters.
One of the interesting characters that I actually had a little bit of fun with, and I just realized I didn't put him in the actual credits, but you have a... So it's funny to see pop-ups personified. Like, if you think of what a pop-up would look like as a person, there's plenty of those that happen in the film. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's actually pretty accurate. And there's a pop-up that they end up befriending, and his name is J.P. Spamley, which is played by Bill Hader. And Bill Hader is... I think he's such a really... interesting voice actor, because he just seems very flexible when he does a lot of his stuff. He also voiced what was the emotion in Inside Out? Nervous or anxious or the one that was just
The purple one.
Yeah, but to see him like actually continue to, you know, really thrive in doing voice acting, it was fun, and he did a really good job. He seemed really right for the part, like the spastic nature of his voice, the way he was like very kind of like not all there but still somewhat there. It was good. I had fun with it. Fear, that's who it was.
All I have to say is and this might hit a little close to home being so soon after for some fans, but for them to stick a visual Stan Lee cameo into this movie was so cool.
I mean,
because it's like derivative of a derivative, like of a of a purchased property. Like but the fact that they did it delighted me.
Yeah, I think one of the things, I think that's going to be one of the things that a lot of people are going to be looking for. In all honesty, because of the fact that it was leaked out that he does have a cameo, it was mentioned, and I think a lot of fans who are going to see this, that's going to be one of their big priorities in terms of looking for a lot of the Easter eggs. Mostly due to the nature of, you know, the recent, you know, circumstance and passings. But it's great how they even were able to get certain individuals who had previous roles within the House of Mouse. And it's no surprise to anybody. There's a great scene where Vanellope ends up in a room full of Disney princesses. And the notion that they're all, I think it's all of them. I don't think they're missing anybody.
I would expect that if you're a Disney movie saying we're putting all of the confirmed Disney princesses into a room together, you'd probably fact check that. So I would guess that these are all of the confirmed princesses. Yes,
I would hope so. I'm just like, it was really cool to see how the care and the mindset of like, okay, we're going to put these princesses in this film, but not only are we going to put them in there, we're going to try to get the original voice actresses for these individuals. Now, obviously, there are certain older properties that you can't get voice actors, the original voice actress for, because either due to...
Snow White was made in 1937 or something, wasn't it? Or
that
39.
Would have been an amazing cameo, though.
I think that was one of the first Disney...
Disney animated, full-length animated musical, yeah.
But you have all the other ones. I think it's her and Cinderella, I believe.
And Sleeping Aurora. Beauty.
And Aurora.
Yeah, those are the ones that they had to get other people to do the voices for.
Which, the actress who did do Cinderella, she's actually voiced the character in, like, the follow-up sequels, like the Cinderella 2s and 3s.
Okay, so they used the modern version, if you will. The
modern version
the sound-alike. Character. I was going to say the look-alike, but really the sound-alike that they've been using.
But then you look at this, like, list of individuals, and, I mean... You have the ones like Kristen Bell and Idina Menzel reprising their role as Anna and Elsa, respectively, from Frozen. You have Ali'i Carvalho, who voiced Moana, and even Merida, Kelly MacDonald. She came back to voice her character. But then you even go back as far as like Irene Bedard, who voiced Pocahontas. She's back in this role of voicing the character. You have Linda Larkin, who voiced the original character of Jasmine, and even Jodie Benson, who voiced Ariel. You have all these original, like, I guess OGs, if you want to go and call it that, but like these original voice actresses who embodied these characters, and to be able to see them all in a singular room, like, okay, if the internet was a physical place to go and you were going to go and visit like the Walt Disney website, this is the room you would hope to find to see all of them in one room to like say, oh my gosh, this is like my entire childhood in one room.
Well, and it's more than just the voices. I mean, they did a really nice job of trying to pretend like not so much the voice actresses were in a room together, but the actual characters of the princesses were in a room together. Yeah. So the way that each of them speaks, the way that different ones sort of view the world and how that is expressed, it's all very appealingly consistent with, for the most part, what you've seen in their own movies.
Yeah, it's like they, none of them missed a beat. Like they've, it feels like they've been practicing and like resurfacing like that role at home for like God knows how long, aside from the other gigs that they have on the side. I'm pretty sure they continue working, they're doing their own thing. But it's really cool to see them like just jump back into it and to be like, Pocahontas was one of those ones that I remember more fondly than some of the other ones because I had the VHS and so I watched it constantly. But like to see the character again and to hear the voice and hear like even just the vocal intonations and the way she speaks and like even they do little funny things like where they're trying to do songs and like the Colors of the Wind happens and there's like a lot of cool stuff and it was really fun to see that. It brought me back to that point in time where I remember first seeing that film. What do you think, Spence? What did you experience about it, that whole entire thing?
I just want to say my favorite character in that scene was Ariel because she's just all sorts of ridiculous.
She's kind of a doofus. I mean, comparatively, like,
but really,
it's appealing, but like she's kind of like she's on a different wavelength. But
yeah, no, like I actually really loved the scenes with the Disney princesses, and it's one of those things where I was like, I wish they didn't put so much in the trailer so that I had more to see now, because that would have been like amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I think they did a really great balance of like having them all in there and being fun whenever they were like a part of what was going on, and then not having them in there too much to take away from the main like.
Oh no, I completely smell a spinoff.
I would love to see
there that will be a spinoff.
If they could, like, if they could pull that off, that'd be so great.
To break them out of their own stories and put them in some other different combined world. I mean, it's like Kingdom Hearts on movies.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, in a movie. Like, it's a no-brainer for Disney. If they didn't have that plan before everybody saw the trailer that first sort of teased that the princesses were going to be in it, you better believe they've got a half-built movie already done.
Oh, yeah.
Like, on paper, not with the voices yet.
Yeah, well, it'd be really sad if they didn't. Because,
well, the problem is that this, so when they, the story goes is that when they created this particular scene, that they were going to mirror this, as well as the entire, like, Walt Disney experience in the film, they were going to mirror it to, like, the Disney Infinity game. The problem is that by the time, which the Disney Infinity game was the game where you bought the game and you could buy the little figures.
Oh, the little figurines, right?
And you could create your own
little
world.
Gosh, they know how to make money.
Well, here's the problem. The Disney Infinity game,
yeah, that got shut.
It got shut down. So,
well, yeah.
So when it got shut down, it happened in the middle of the production for this film. So instead of them going the route of creating a like mirror of that, they just went with the whatever it was called in the film. It was called like the My Walt Disney World or My Disney something or Disney.
Oh, yeah,
something unique.
And that's all right. Disney Plus is going to take over when it launches, and they're all going to have their own series, and they're going to have a series together, and they're going to have movies, and they're going to make a lot of money.
Well, they're already making a lot of money. I think one of my favorite parts is the scene with Merida. Like, that is my one. That is probably like my favorite part.
Which
of that.
We're not going to give away.
No. It's in the trailer.
No, actually, that's different. What's in the movie is different from what's in the trailer.
Oh, then I won't say it.
Because like I rewatched that trailer like 20 times to figure out what she was trying to say.
Ah, okay. And so
now I will say one of the things that really makes everything gel together. Because the whole reason that that even is part of the story is because Vanellope herself is a princess.
Yes.
Right? She's the princess of Candy Crush. And she hasn't found her song. She hasn't found her calling yet. She hasn't had her moment when the universe shines a spotlight on her and gives her her like princess debut. And so, but the thing that's really great about it is the effect that she has on them immediately. Like, they go through all of the kind of the tropes and the expected, like, did you have to be saved by a big, strong man? Did they have you locked up? Did they think you couldn't fight for yourself? Did they, whatever. And they're all in their expected normal outfits. And what they notice with her and what she kind of gets through to them is how nice it is to be comfortable. And so then they're all in comfs. Like, they're all in T-shirts and lounge pants and whatever for a while. And they have little slogans and logos on their clothing that are referencing, you know, them or their story. Their and it's all cute and clever and everything. But I thought it was great, you know, as much as they are there to influence Vanellope's development as a character, if you will, she also influences every single one of them with how she looks, how she behaves, kind of just her whole lifestyle.
Yeah, which it's really fun to see because it's like they... It's almost like seeing somebody who is looking at like a food or a type of thing that they've never experienced before and like, what is that? Like, they're looking at her like, this feels so great. What are you wearing? And she's like, oh, they're like, what kind of gown is this? And it's funny to see almost
and
like
the rest of us are looking at it like, that's an upside down Reese cup.
It's great to see like the intentional like crossover into the contemporary world, if you will, of like bringing the characters that have always mirrored like, oh, the big poofy dresses, the tiaras, the glass slippers, the, you know, the pale face and red lipstick or however, whatever they've mirrored prior to, whatever they've always showcased as what a princess should look like. And then giving the turnaround of like, oh, well, I can be a princess and look like this. And I think that was kind of like the really fun overall message that really translated well enough for me, at least, to say, okay, that was actually pretty smart. Like, I get what you're doing, because you're trying to give the mindset that you don't have to be in a big dress and a tiara and you don't have to talk to animals just to be a princess. You can be in loungewear and still be a princess.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was actually pretty smart.
You could be Ralph and you somehow be a princess.
Oh, yes. But that goes to, like...
Say no more.
Oh, my God.
But that goes to, like, the overall, like, idea of what Disney was trying to do with this particular film. Like we said, there's a lot of meta content in this particular movie. There's a lot of opportunities where you can connect with something, not just an entity that you've recognized from the internet, but even an entity or, like, something that you remember from your childhood. Which it's kind of like it's kind of the progression from the first film in that aspect. In the first film, you see a lot of things that you remember growing up in gaming, in pop culture that time.
Depending on your age, because if you were a young person, mm-hmm. which would presumably be the target audience for something like, I don't know, an animated movie, you know, a young person isn't necessarily familiar with Sonic the Hedgehog and Pac-Man and whatever.
True.
I mean, like, maybe if their parents were into it, then they've passed that on in some form to their kids. But for the most part, all that would have been probably new to a 6-year-old or an 8-year-old or a 10-year-old then.
Easily. But bringing that aspect into this from the scale and genre, if you will, of gaming... And then moving it up a notch to the internet. So it's just another platform to which kids spend most of their time. I mean, let's be honest. How many times do we see a kid walking around with an iPad or with a phone or on some type of device watching something or playing something on the internet?
Sure. I mean, parents with toddlers or babies, they will use the device to babysit their kids for a while.
Exactly. And this is an opportunity to just widen that scale.
This is a no judgment zone. I'm just pointing out. Sometimes you see a 2-year-old with an iPad playing a game like Pancakes or Milkshakes.
I almost choked on that one. And this is another opportunity to widen the scale and to be able to get another sense of familiarity with the kids, whom probably already know about a lot of the things that are in the film. I mean, they see the boxes that come to the door that say Amazon. They see the parents that are on eBay ordering or bidding for stuff. They know what Google is because it's
Facebook, Instagram, exactly. Pinterest, Snapchat,
YouTube.
I mean, they're all in this movie.
Exactly.
They're mostly cameos also. I mean, the platforms themselves, like the logo gets a cameo, but eBay's in it quite a bit.
Yeah. eBay's a big part of it. But it's interesting how they decide to make that progression in terms of awareness and meta. And you know what? I don't even like using the word meta. There's a word there. You had mentioned something prior to Chad.
Oh, had I?
Where you had said the film just had so many nods that it wasn't it. You thought about it today. It wasn't actually meta. You considered it something else.
Yeah. So when we finished viewing the film a day ago, the first thing that came to mind was, man, that was so meta, because it's commenting on itself. It's commenting on the structure of the internet, which it's also existing within. It's commenting on society. It has some really clever, meaningful, brief, but meaningful asides about, you know, like comment sections on video platforms and stuff like that. That are, I mean, when you talk about cyberbullying and whatever, they don't linger on it, but they do justice to getting the key points across, you know, and it's refreshing to see. And so I walked out thinking, man, that movie was so meta. It was like meta about being meta in some ways, you know, like it did something similar to what we see in Deadpool, where Deadpool just breaks the fourth wall. So he can be meta because he breaks the fourth wall. But this was not just, it wasn't really breaking the fourth wall. It was commenting on its commentary about itself. When you're paying attention to the nuances. And I thought that was cool. But then this morning, I woke up and I thought, you know, it's not really so much that it's so meta. Like, this is just such an elevated university discourse. You know, like, it wasn't really meta. It was just really clever. Like, there are so many small touches in this movie that are so cleverly executed and put out there that it's really impressive, even though I do have some hang-ups about, you know, the flow of the story and some things that we'll get to in a minute. But even in spite of my hang-ups, that's notwithstanding how ridiculously clever this thing is.
Yeah. And this film really does touch on a lot of different facets of not just the obvious things like the internet and whatnot, but even in terms of like personal growth and relationships and the dynamic of relationships and recognizing, you know, how one can process, you know, loss, and even the idea of there's a lot of things that this film really digs into, unbeknownst to like some of the kids. Like, children will come into this and they'll get the basic premise of it, but as an adult who I believe most of us here understand like basic psychiatry, or at least the idea of like certain aspects of it, this film really does get deep in certain parts. And it's like, that was a really interesting concept. And the way that arc worked really did, you know, see a lot of resolution in that particular area. And it's really interesting to find that as that progression from what we saw in the first film. Because with Wreck-It Ralph, you find a character who is essentially pitted as a bad villain, as a bad guy who wants to be more than that, and found he can be more than that without having to actually do something ridiculous. He can actually be a good guy and still maintain his role within the confines of his community, and understanding and accepting himself. And there's a lot of like psychology within that realm. You look at that, this, what they do in this film is kind of like a good amount, like a couple times more like intricate and deep.
There's a lot more going on in this movie than in the first one.
Yeah. But like Chad said, and I do have to agree, there are certain things that, you know, the film does stumble upon in terms of timing and story flow that it just, unfortunately, you can't look past. And one of those things that I really did have an issue with was how the film unfolds its entire story. Now, at the beginning of the film, you're made aware of like the base. Like, if you've seen the trailers, you understand Vanellope and Ralph are going to the internet to look for something. You find out what they're looking for in the film. The thing is, you actually resolve that particular part of the film earlier on, and there's a whole separate story that unfolds at the second half of that film, almost that last third, if you will. And that's where a lot of that depth comes into play, a lot of that emotional, like, just investigation, if you want to call it, of understanding a lot. And the problem is that in between for me, like, you have the first part, and it goes back to what Chad, actually, you're the one who had mentioned it, how the first part really carries a lot of quickness to it. The story element is moving, it flows, it goes, and you get to the point to where you're like, okay, I understand what's going on. And then it kind of slows things down almost to, like, I don't want to say like a walking pace, but it's slowed down quite a bit.
You notice it because it's so fast. Like, the first two-thirds of the movie or so, just go. That's why you don't want to get sidetracked in all the Easter eggs, because like, they're only on the screen for a second or two.
Right.
So if you get stuck watching something in the background, you're gonna miss like three steps in the story, because it moves very quickly. And then there comes a point in the story where Ralph and Vanellope are separated, not through any nefarious means. I mean, they're on complementary missions, let's say. So they're both on a path of their own that still is working toward the goal. And at that point, because you're now telling two stories instead of one, everything feels like it cuts back to about half the pace that it was going before, because you can only be with one of them at a time.
Right.
And when your initial, like, quest, what looks to be the quest, which is to get a replacement part for Candy Crush, Candy Crush.
Yeah. No, Sugar Rush.
Sugar Rush. I'm like, it's not Candy Crush, because that's the actual. Anyway, Sugar Rush.
We were close.
So once that's resolved, normally you would have like any kind of emotional subtext or other things that are built into the plot connected to the quest. They'd all resolve at the same time.
Yeah.
Here, you have most of that quest gets completed before their paths diverge. And then the quest to get the replacement part is completed, but their paths are still separate. And so you have this whole other third of the movie, which is all the emotional weight that has been, you know, seeds have been planted the whole way along. You're not surprised by it.
Yeah.
But now you have this whole emotional arc that needs to come to the foreground, crescendo, climax, and resolve.
Yeah.
And so you're like, oh, the quest is done and the movie is not.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And it's an interesting dynamic for this particular film, because the way that first quest resolves, so to speak, it makes it feel like, okay, that's the entire movie. That was good. It's then what follows after the fact, that it's not that it's bad. It's just that it kind of takes, it's a different pace. It's a different speed. It's totally in a different kind of frequency in terms of what we just previously saw. The first film, the first part of that film, you recognize, you saw, you conquered with the heroes, and you move forward and resolution. Then you get into this, and it gets deep. It gets more meta. You see a lot more of like the dynamic of what the filmmakers are really trying to get you to understand about the characters. You're really trying to understand, you know, where the relationship is at, and the dynamic of you know, what the internet is really about, and the nefarious parts about the internet, and why you shouldn't go to the dark webs and things like that. Like, there's a lot of things in there that begin to take the story to a deeper level. The thing is that you begin to add that much depth that late into the film, and if it was any other film, you can lose audiences right away.
Mm, yeah.
Like, you add a lot of that depth to it. You add a lot more subtext to a film in the last third, and I've already been invested into this two-hour film for two-thirds of the way in. If I'm in that last third, I'm hoping for that plane to start, you know, descending to land. You know, that's what you're expecting. You know, you get the plane, you know, lift off, the flight, the landing. And that's what you're expecting with the last third. You're expecting that landing to be you know, smooth and whatnot, and this film just continued to climb, and that plane just continued to climb, and it continued to climb, and I'm like, this is really getting kind of heavy. But, like I said, it was the sequel to Wreck-It Ralph. It's Ralph Breaks the Internet. I was invested into the story since 2012. I was wanting to see resolution.
Yeah.
Now, like I said, had it been any other property, I don't know if I'd be saying the same things. I don't know. What do you think, Spence?
No, like, this movie does, like, a balancing act that works for the most part. But there are a few issues, but I don't feel like anyone else could have balanced it out quite like this movie does. Because, as you said, like, you know, with, you know, what's going on between Ralph and Vanellope, like, that late in the movie, if this was, like, some other, like, movie and this was their first entry, it'd be kind of bizarre. Mm. But, like, I think because this series of movies has kind of set itself up as being slightly deeper, it's able to kind of finagle it a bit better than something else would.
He said finagle.
It's a $10 vocabulary word. Wendy's Frosties on Spencer.
And I think that's, for me, that's very much a Pixar thing. Like, when I think of, like, that type of storytelling, I think of Pixar. Now, not to confuse Walt Disney Animation Studios with Pixar, although they're both owned by, you know, Walt Disney.
Disney, yeah.
You know, they're both owned by the same large company, but they're two separate studios. Pixar has been able to create incredible stories that have that story element. The thing is, they know where to place it a little better. It's more of like the way they add that, you know, emotional depth is usually at the close to the tail end of the second third. Like, that's when they begin to start implementing it, because then you allow the transition from the second to third act to be the follow through, like the actual understanding of, like, okay, and this is where we really are. Not so much as like, okay, and we're descending, but we're not really descending, we're going all the way up. Like, Pixar creates that true reveal, if you will, of the emotional atmosphere of the film right at the tail end of that second act.
Well, and here's the thing. When you look at, like, story architecture and the way that all the popular stories from yesterday and today and whatever, the way that they're structured, you have almost in every case, when it's not a tragedy, by the end of it, your goal is to restore the balance that existed to begin with.
Yeah.
So before something broke, whatever that something is, by the end of it, you've gone through all the trials and tribulations and you've restored something. Even if it's not the same as it was before,
mm-hmm.
the feeling of balance is back.
Yeah.
And one bold move that this movie makes, this story takes the track of, well, what if we didn't have to restore the exact balance mm-hmm. that existed in the beginning?
Yeah.
And the quest that they're on to get the replacement part and all of that goes through, you know, the first two thirds, as we've said, and that would be the act that then restores the balance mm-hmm. once
yeah.
they make it back to the arcade out of the internet. But the fact that the story moves beyond that
yeah.
and where the story ultimately ends up, which is, it's a new form of balance. It's not what you were used to before. And I think one of the things that's really compelling and winsome about it is that it does a better job mirroring real life.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like
yeah.
when you do have, like, life-changing decisions to make or events that happen, and you eventually, once you've kind of ridden out the storm and charted a new course or whatever, you do get back to a form of balance, but it doesn't mean that you are the same person you were when you went in, and it doesn't mean that you end up in the same place you were at before you started that leg of the journey.
Yeah.
So to get to that kind of a feeling in an animated film like this
yeah.
is pretty remarkable. I'll be honest, it was annoying while I was sitting there because I thought that the movie was closer to being over than it actually was. Not that I didn't like the movie, but I was
yeah.
like, oh, wait a minute. How much longer is this thing? But by the end of it, and upon reflection, I really have to tip my hat to the creators, because it's a gutsy move.
Yeah.
The way that they choose to resolve this story, it's not what you necessarily would expect.
Yeah.
And I don't know that they fully land the plane, to borrow your metaphor.
True.
I don't know that you leave the theater feeling like, man, I'm just as happy walking out as I was walking in.
Yeah.
The end credit scene does a lot to improve your mood. But yeah, it's a courageous story decision for them to have committed to and made, like, this is the final product.
Yeah.
This is what this story is doing. It's not going the expected route that all those other princess movies do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's doing something different. It's doing something pretty unique.
Yeah.
For a story resolution like this, you'd normally look to, like, art house films.
Very true.
To do something different in that way, structurally different.
You know, like, the whole time that we're going through this end sequence where they're like, oh, like, you know, this is going to be the new normal. I was like, no, it's not. Like, this is not how Disney does
it. Yeah, you want to fight it.
I'm like, yeah, because I was like, this is weird, but also kind of cool that it's different,
yeah.
But mostly just odd.
And I think you have to give a lot of that credit, a lot of the credibility for the believability of the way this film resolves based on your love of the franchise prior to. Like, recognizing how great Wreck-It Ralph was and how the first film really served something different in 2012. Like we said, it not only did it give us the first successful video game movie, but it also gave us an opportunity to recognize that, you know, everybody has the ability to be good. Everybody has the ability to accept themselves. People can accept themselves for who they are and still be happy. You know, there's a lot of that within it. And that was a new concept in terms of translating that through an animated film. So blatantly, it wasn't even like subtle. It was like the mantra that he says, I am bad. I am good. And that's not bad. I am bad. And whatever he says,
right.
Yeah. But it's memorable. And it's something obviously not as memorable. I didn't remember, but it's memorable when you see the film, and it's something that resonates because you recognize what it's truly saying, that I accept myself for who I am, even if who I am is not something that everybody else accepts. And to find that in that film and allow kids to see that was remarkable. Now you've jumped forward 6 years to what this film is doing, and the understanding of the concepts that it's trying to translate is it's a different type of depth, but it's still a deeper well to pull from. And it's very unique to hear how this film resolves and what it's really serving up to the young audience, like what they're understanding at the end of this film. And I think this is the direction that Walt Disney Animation Studios is going. Whereas when we talk about Pixar, the Pixar formula is to take you on an emotional journey. I think Walt Disney Animation Studios is taking you on a self-discovery kind of journey. And I think a lot of what they've served up so far have been exactly that. Like, you look at, unfortunately, there's a kind of difference in terms of whether or not who truly owns Brave, but you have Pixar and Walt Disney Animation Studios. There's always that back and forth. You never know who's from what. But either way, that film is one of the films that I remember watching that truly has the deep concepts of, like, family and understanding that the dynamic of your relationship is more important than the role of your relationship, and being able to see how people can, you know, come to an understanding even if somebody gets turned into a bear. I mean, it's
hey, it happens.
It happens, right? California. No, but it's interesting how they're using that type of motivation to create the stories for these films by allowing people to see they can be who they want to be even if they don't look or feel like the people or look like what they want to become. Like, you can still feel like yourself.
The other thing that it does really almost poetically is, you know, whereas something like Shrek kind of needs to make fun of its own genre,
yeah,
in order to have that relevance,
yeah,
authenticity kind of feel to it. Like, it has to be belittling parts of itself, like the way the princesses are there, and like, let's unleash our forest animals as weapons and whatnot, and or make the bird explode. You never forget, like, when Fiona sings and the bird keeps going and then just pops.
Yeah.
You know, but it has to have that kind of making fun of the genre element.
Like self-deprecating.
Here, it doesn't actually go to a place where they make fun of, like, the Disney princesses or Disney as a corporate, you know, almost monopoly, or making fun of any of the real life internet platforms and properties that are a part of the story. But at the same time, it does call certain things into question. It does try to establish perspective. And I think the thing that really, by the end of the movie, what resonates so well in the resolution is that it turns out, which it's no real surprise, but it turns out you've had two main characters the entire time.
Yeah.
From the first movie and the second movie, Ralph and Vanellope are both primary main characters.
Yeah.
And because at this point, their relationship is not romantic, it's a friendship relationship, it allows them more latitude to, you know, between the two stories, you get a fuller sense of what you might call the human experience. Even though they are digital characters in a digital environment, what the story is trying to push through to us as the audience is, you know, different windows on the human experience.
Yeah. So, wrapping up this conversation, let's go around the table and talk about if there was any other issues or anything highlighted that we thought about the film. I'll go ahead and kind of kickstart this off in terms of one of the things that I thought was a really interesting highlight. I did enjoy Gal Gadot as her role as Shank in the film. I thought it was a unique experience. I'm glad it wasn't like a mirror image of what she did in that one Fast and the Furious film, which was horrible, and she looked really different than how she looks now. I enjoyed her role in that film, and I thought her character wasn't the type of character that, like, oh, she looks nefarious, I think she's gonna like turn heel like two thirds into the, like, she seemed like a legitimate caring character. They portray her in the game, in the film slash game, as this, you know, big boss entity, but then as soon as like the players and the NPCs are out of the realm of where they're at, they kind of like drop the persona, and it's like they're talking normal. They're like talking to each other. One of them is talking about a TED talk that he heard. It's hilarious. And seeing Gal Gadot just kind of have fun in that particular role, I thought that was pretty fun. One of the things I wanted to highlight. What about you, Chad?
Well, I mean, one of the things that stuck out to me that we haven't talked about was the mechanism by which Ralph in particular, but also Vanellope, but mainly Ralph, acquires the part that they're trying to get for Sugar Rush.
Yeah.
Just the way that they integrate the whole like online video culture, and what becomes popular and how quickly it becomes popular and then how quickly it loses popularity, and then the memes that they decided to go ahead and replicate in the movie. We titled this lesson Ralph Breaks the Internet hashtag goat, as in like greatest of all time, which is also a reference to one of the memes that they modify using Ralph. And just the way that it you get a view in the real world, which is also computer animated, but outside the digital environment. There are quote-unquote human characters in the world of Wreck-It Ralph who are viewing Wreck-It Ralph memes on BuzzTube, which is the blend of BuzzFeed and YouTube in the movie. And like just all the different layers and levels of that whole mess, but how delightful it is to see. I was tickled.
It was really interesting, to be honest. Not that it slipped my mind, but I was kind of fixated on the princesses, but no, the as to like the nature of how they presented, like if you look at one of the biggest topics in terms of around the communities that are online, YouTube and YouTube, you know, funding and making money off of YouTube is a big conversation piece. A lot of people are always talking about it. So to see this, and like you were saying, to recognize like, oh, that was famous 15 seconds ago, but now it's not anymore. And now we're moving on to the next big thing. It's like, that's honestly the nature of how YouTube works.
Yeah.
People are like fixated on one thing for 1 second, and then the next big thing happens in like 10 seconds later. And you're like, oh, but okay. So it's really interesting how they portray that. And going back to what you had mentioned earlier, Chad, about the online bullying and, you know, the trolls in the comment section and the people who are just negative, and addressing that, not like overlooking it. Because I thought, honestly, they were going to go into that particular territory, but they have that. And it's really interesting to see how they handle it in terms of presenting like, this is the way the internet is, but you can rise above it. And I like the way they portrayed it and they presented it as a whole, not just like the glamorous part, but even the other side of things.
I'm actually kind of really surprised they even bothered to address like internet trolls and that kind of stuff.
Really?
Even though it wasn't like, you know, a super long thing, like it just seemed like the type of thing that, you know, we can easily gloss over this and everything's great on the internet and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was good. I mean, I once was an educator. You were as well, Eddie.
Yes.
And, you know, like I think about, you know, the way that the world works for the students that I had or the young people that I've worked with in the years since, and how that's different than when any of us were young, you know? And we're navigating those same changes too. I mean, we have digital lives and, you know, in the world, physical lives, and sometimes they're not exactly the same or whatever. Like, we watch YouTube videos and we have Facebook accounts, most of us. You know, so that's been something for us to adjust to, but younger generations have grown up with it.
Yeah.
And the value that they place on it is different, and where they find value in those interactions is different. They didn't have something that came before, like an experience that came before that dynamic. That's a question mark for them. They've never known anything other than the connected life. Again, 2-year-olds playing milkshakes or pancakes. So... to have something in there, and I think about the young people I've worked with, it made me happy as an adult person looking back. You know, like if I was their age, I would not know how valuable that scene would be if I really listened to what she says.
Mm-hmm.
Like how on point that character, is in that moment when she's explaining to Ralph, like, don't take all that with you.
Yeah.
And don't believe that that's all there is in the internet either.
Yeah.
Because it's sage advice.
It really is. Mm-hmm. What about you, Spence? Were there any highlights for you in the film? Anything that you'd like to...
No.
Any issues?
Any issues? No, I think we pretty much covered the issues.
Spencer's tapped out. Gotcha.
Spencer loved the... Fix It Felix and Calhoun family unit that developed in this movie.
That was disturbing.
That was really interesting, especially to hear Calhoun like, they are not a bunch of hooligans. They are like, that's not how you sounded in the first film, but okay.
Not at all.
Hey, 6 years of marriage can change you.
Hey, there you go. Well, I guess that about wraps up this episode. We're going to go around the table and see what our thoughts were initially on, or what our... It's been a while. go ahead and give
our
rating.
Did you guys not give monocles when I wasn't here?
We handed out pancakes.
And milkshakes.
I'll take a milkshake and a pancake.
Let's go ahead and see if the film passes or fails and how many monocles. I will go ahead and kick this off. The film definitely passes for me. It was an extremely fun experience. I had a good time. I would have maybe handled the transition from the second to third act a little better, maybe even handled the way it delivered the third act's main premise, but all in all, I still had a good time with it. And so it does pass for me. In terms of monocles, I'm gonna give it a 4 out of 5. I thought the information that it gives is really great. I love the story. I love the idea of how this film resolves. And I think it's a great film to really continue that conversation of what the film begins. Like the film begins a conversation that if parents really are keen, can take that and continue it at home. Mm-hmm. And that's what any great story does. It builds something so that you can take home and continue at home, or you continue the conversation with your community. And I think this film does a great job in doing so. So what about you, Chad?
I agree. I would pass the film. I really enjoyed all of it, even the stuff that I was a little, you know, unhappy with in terms of the pacing. I still enjoyed the movie. I enjoyed the themes. I loved the Easter eggs. I don't know that I'll go right back to the theater to try to find more, but I'll certainly watch it when it comes out on DVD mm-hmm. to see what else I can see. I will absolutely monitor the internet to see what other people noticed that I missed. Yeah. GeoCities got a mention. MySpace was kind of in there.
At the very bottom.
Yeah.
Well, GeoCities like was in there? I missed that.
Yeah. It was the sign that got moved out of the way. It was down in the the depths of the forgotten part
with,
of the internet.
Oh, dial-up and all that stuff?
Yeah.
Okay.
In terms of monocles, I'll also give it a 4. I really, really liked the things that I really liked.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Spence.
I will also pass this, huge shocker, and I'll give it a 4 out of 5. This movie was a really good follow-up to Wreck-It Ralph. I loved what they did with Disney Princesses. I liked how most of the story went, except for a few bits. It's a really great movie, and I think people should see it.
Well, there you go. That about wraps up another awesome episode. Again, let us know what you think when you check out the film this week. The film debuts Wednesday. We'd love to hear your thoughts, so drop us a line on our Facebook page at facebook.com/filmlosophers or our Twitter page at twitter.com/philosophy101. Just to let you know, it is Thanksgiving week, so happy Gobble Gobble week. Happy Gobble Gobble day if you're listening to this on Thursday. And we're glad that you could bring us along with your holiday plans if you are listening to us during the course of Thanksgiving week.
I mean, so many people travel Thanksgiving week. You're probably listening to this on a plane, train, bus, car ride,
plane,
something.
Trains, automobiles, all of the above. But to let you know of a couple of releases that are coming out, actually Wednesday during Thanksgiving week, you got Ralph Breaks the Internet. You also have Creed 2 and Robin Hood, which is actually one of the films that Chad is looking forward to. So.
Yes, I'm excited. It might be a terrible movie, I don't know, but I want to go see it.
So, like we said, let us know what you end up going and checking out, and drop us a line on our socials, and check out all of our previous episodes on our website at filmlosophers.com. We had a really great time with this film, and like we said, this is one of those types of movies where you're going to go into it already enjoying the previous film, and you're going to walk out with a deeper conversation that you weren't expecting to have. And it's a great segue into understanding more and more of the direction Walt Disney Animation Studios is wanting to take their films, especially now that we know Toy Story 4 is on the horizon. So I'm expecting some deep therapy sessions after that film.
Spencer, your face just changed.
I'm sorry. After the third one, I decided to watch that with my family. That was a mistake. That was such a hard ending to get through.
I almost brought it back up, and I'm like, I can't.
Oh,
it's a really
hopefully they won't do that again.
I doubt it. You know they're going, I mean, Lord above, that third film had me in tears, and I was old when I saw it. So either way, that about wraps up the episode. So from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Chad.
I'm Spence.
Class dismissed.